This is an adult-oriented podcast involving discussions about sex and the BDSM lifestyle. If you do not wish to hear about these things, or if you are under 18 years of age, stop listening now. This isn't the show for you. I torture you. Take my hand through the flames. I torture you. I'm a slave to your games. And welcome back to Adventures in Kink. I'm BK.
I'm Princess Pita.
And tonight, before we get going on our main topic, what I would like to discuss is the little fundraiser that we have going on where we're collecting jackets and coats and blankets and hats and socks for the homeless. Apparently, someone sent Sasha, our friend who has been doing this for years, a very disturbing message asking Sasha to offer up their holes instead. Well, to you, sir, and I'm sure you're not listening because you're not quite this classy, fuck you. These people need help. They don't need holes. They need warmth. They need comfort. And they need to know that people care.
I agree.
And in my greatest Forrest Gump, and that's all I have to say about that.
There are just some people who don't get it.
Right. And there's absolutely uncalled for to send a message like that to someone who's trying to do good in this world.
You know, some people feel very brave behind their keyboards.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guarantee you face to face, they won't feel so brave. They weren't even local to the Dallas community.
That was just a troll. And you have to let it go. Yeah.
But it does irritate me. And I would like to apologize to Sasha, even though it was not us that did that. I still feel the need to apologize because we did kind of bring this out and bring extra light on it.
Well, you know, we have to trust that there's good people in the world and that people are going to start making donations and it balances out the bad,
yes,
the evil.
I agree. And I know that there are a lot of good people out there who will donate, and we appreciate that. We thank you very greatly for that.
Yes.
Okay, on with the main beefy part of this show. Our main topic tonight is balance, that great balancing act, the act of balancing your kinky life with your personal vanilla private life. Some people live a kinky life 24/7. Some just do kink when they can. Everyone that's into kink has to find a way to balance their fun with their everyday responsibilities of life.
And that is something that everybody struggles with it. It's been really on our minds lately because the vanilla life is trying to take over.
Oh, it is. It comes in cycles, I think, sometimes, but
I feel like there's a pendulum to it. Anytime it swings too far in one direction, it has to autocorrect. And eventually it's going to swing back the other way until you can find that balance in the center.
I think that you're correct. I have been working 7 days a week, every other week, just to make a little extra money because they're talking about shutting down at the end of the year for this, that, and the other. And I'm just trying to get ahead so that we have something that we can fall back on. And now there's talk that my department might not actually shut down at the end. So if I'm not trying to get caught up and get ahead, then maybe I'm going to be a little further ahead, which is okay too. That's not a problem. But at any rate, it has taken a toll on me physically because I get up at an ungodly hour and work ungodly hours. And then the drive is a little longer than most commutes, but we do what we have to for the people that we love. And so, you know,
that's me.
Yeah, that's you. That's part of life. You do those things and you get by, but the kinky stuff, it you can't delve into it as often as you would like.
You know, it's really difficult to fit it into our schedules right now with your work schedule. And I work two jobs, mm-hmm, and there are young people walking around the house.
Yes. So we can't just on a whim say, strip, bend over the kitchen island.
I mean, you could, but it probably wouldn't be appropriate.
Someone would walk in on that and then they would not be able to look you in the face for
ever again.
Yeah. For some people, that demanding master, you know, in their life, they would require them to do all their chores, you know, and that takes care of getting those extra little things done, right? I don't do that to you because you're not a slave, but we're both struggling to find time to get everything done with yard work and laundry. And even though those may be the young people walking around's chores, they're back in school and they've activities got homework started, and activities have started. And it's a balancing act for them, just not the same balancing act that we have. But everything in life is a balancing act. Too much of a good thing, right?
True.
So work can be stressful. Wouldn't it just be nice if we could come home and take off all our clothes and just wait for that great beating followed by a great fucking and then amazing night's sleep and then do it all again the next day? Wouldn't that be cool?
I mean, I kind of feel like that just about happened today, except for the beating, but...
You didn't get a beating, but you did get to lay on some furniture and you imagined some. I could hear the wheels turning. I was like, you got to get off it now.
He's in the middle of building a cross.
St. Andrew's Cross.
St. Andrew's Cross, yeah.
And you were helping me, and I appreciate that. Unfortunately, most of us, that we dream about that scenario where we just everything falls into place naturally. We really have to work at it. But we all refuse to give up on our kink. And just like we refuse to give up on this podcast, we're going to get it done. Sunday will not be the day that this comes out probably anymore.
It's too much because you work every other weekend. And so finding time to record on those weekends when you're working is become way too burdensome.
It has become problematic at best.
Yeah.
So we're going to shoot for a Monday release.
Because then if you do have the weekend off, we can record and edit on the weekend. But if you don't, we still have Monday to record.
Right.
Only problem with that is we're recording on a Monday, and that means I have 3 hours to get it edited. And it usually takes me 6 to 8 hours to edit a podcast.
Right. So we apologize for the scheduling difficulties. But if you do have the Podbean app, it will automatically download it for you and tell you that it's there. Just throwing that out there.
You know, hopefully people understand it's part of the balance too. When you have job responsibilities and parent responsibilities, this is technically a hobby, so it has to, it cannot be the priority. As much as we love doing it, it cannot be our priority.
I'll say this, as much as we love doing it, if anything happens with the kids or something or family, that will take precedent over this. I don't think there's anyone that will disagree. It's not that we don't love you guys out there listening. It's that, you know, we have to be responsible for our family first.
And I think everybody understands that. So
I do too.
It would be great, you know, if I could be that perfect sub all the time and, you know, stay home and keep a nice house and be ready and, you know, able to serve you whenever you come home and take care of you and make dinner. And that is not how life works sometimes.
No, it is not.
I have, like I said, 2 jobs. In addition to those 2 jobs, I have 2 kids who are teenagers, and they are a full-time job all by themselves. They're very, very active. You know, they're not the kind of teenagers that sit in their rooms all day and never come out. Sometimes they are, but they want to talk to us and tell us about their days and watch TV with us and eat dinner and play board games. And, you know, they're a very present part of our lives. So we work around them. But
we gladly work around them.
Yes, we do, because, you know, time with the kids is precious. My oldest and your oldest are seniors.
Yes.
And just saying that word
brings a tear and a pitter pat.
Makes me choke up a little because time is so short. The time left is so short. And the youngest is just 2 years behind them, and then we'll have an empty house and we won't have those scheduling problems anymore, but we'll miss them.
We certainly will miss them.
So we gladly work around the kids.
Of course, we're probably also going to change the locks, but I digress.
Well, there will probably be more furniture pop-up and more call before you visits.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, real world. Real world takes us away. You know, the job. Your job is a killer. My job is not the leave your work at work kind of job.
Right.
My job comes home with me. I do 3 or 4 hours of work almost every night when I come home. And then I have a second job. And
it comes home with you too.
Also comes home with me. So it would be nice to have one of those 9-to-5 kind of jobs that stayed 9-to-5, but it does not always work that way.
I would love 9 to 5. I'm stuck on 5 to 5.
Yeah, that's not fun. And I do get up with you at 2:30 in the morning and make your lunch.
You do. You get up with me every day that my alarm goes off at 2:30 a.m.
And that is one of those little ways that we manage to have a little bit of that power exchange relationship mm-hmm. in our regular everyday lives. You know, we tell the kids that I get up to make your lunch because I'm nice and that's a nice thing to do. But I do it more because it's a very clear way for me to show service. Just a little bit, not a huge big deal, but I get out of bed at 2:30 on the mornings that you go to work and I make your lunch and I say goodbye and then I go back to sleep. But it's an opportunity for me to serve just a little bit.
Another thing that you do is on the days that I work that you don't work, you make it a point to try and have dinner ready when I walk in the door.
I do try, yes.
Sometimes you mistime it because, oh, crap, I thought you were further away. But, you know,
it's always ready to go.
It's ready to get started at least. And I never, seldom if ever, have to wait for dinner on those nights. And it's not unnoticed. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you. I try. So as far as trying to maintain that balance, because we talked about all the reasons why that balance is hard to maintain, but how do we keep the kink relationship alive? How do we maintain the balance between vanilla and kink? And for me, one of the major things that we do is schedule the crap out of everything. We have a shared calendar. We each have a calendar that is shared with each other, and we put everything. If I have a work meeting, it goes on the calendar. If you have to stay after for something, it goes on the calendar. Mm-hmm. Doctor's appointments, kids' activities, my extra work activities, both of our work schedules are on there. Every single minutia of our life goes on the calendar.
Everything has its own color, and it looks like a freaking rainbow bright threw up on it or something. It's really impressive.
It's a little bit insane, but it helps us manage the schedule to the point where we can pull out a calendar and say, all right, what do we have that day? Nope, that's not going to work. You know, this person has a play party. Can we make that work? Okay, maybe, but we might have to show up late. You know, we have a way of trying to fit all these things into the schedule. And so we do that.
Just don't show up at Barron's early.
Do not show up at Barron's early. Bad things happen. Besides scheduling, we take our weekends where the kids are at their dad's, or at least my kids are at their dad's, very, very seriously. Those weekends, unless we cannot help it at all because a work thing comes up, are sacred. You know, we will go to kink events, we'll go visit friends, but it's also our time to kind of reconnect, because sometimes it's all we can do to get a goodbye out in the morning and a hey, how you doing, let's go to sleep in the evening.
Honey, I'm home.
Yeah, I mean, there's days, and I know there's dinner in there and a little bit of conversation, but there are days that we don't really remember the conversation at night because we're mm-hmm. both so exhausted by the time you get home and eat dinner and we crash early that it's all we can do to get through the, you know,
twice,
several days in a row.
Twice I rejected recording this podcast this past week because I was so exhausted.
We actually sat down to try to record one day and we were both so tired that we were mad. I was angry, and it wasn't at anybody. I was so tired, and just the act of sitting down and trying to do this, I knew I was not in the right headspace. It had been a long day. I was exhausted. You were exhausted. We were both just kind of.
So we just called it off that day.
Figured we would make a much better podcast if we rested a little and did it later, because it was not going to be good that night. But those weekends that we have off together, I mean, if we didn't have those, we would be hurting.
We would.
Because that's when we get a chance to be a little kinky, mm-hmm. have a little play at home, go out and see friends in the kink world, reconnect with people. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes it gets a little old being disconnected from everybody else. I mean, we have it really difficult right now because without a dungeon and being so far away, it is very difficult for us.
Extremely.
To stay in touch with people. So we use those weekends. And it's not as often as we would like, but we use those weekends to reconnect with each other, with our friends, and try to get some play in. because, gosh, that does not happen on your regular every day. I mean, sex, yes, but
yeah.
But play, no, we can't do that. Also, I know some of your work friends kind of are aware of your lifestyle.
Right.
Mine are not. My family is not. My friends are not. My kids are not. I cannot let any of that out.
No, you can't.
Because I work in an industry where that would totally be unacceptable and it could be cause for being fired. My family is ultra conservative, would not understand. So I feel like I'm always shoving that part of me inside. And that's when it's really important to get out and be around people who understand and accept and they share the same kind of...
That's also why we don't have any face pictures on our personal profiles or on the podcast profile or on my toy profile. We don't have any face pictures at all. There are boobs, lots of boobs. I love the boobs. And whereas I would not be fired at work if it became a deal, there are some people that know. There are some people I work with who are on FetLife. There are some people at work that we're planning to interview for the show.
And that's awesome. I wish I could be open about who I am. Because it feels like such a huge part of me that I cannot share with anybody in my life outside of you. And the friends that I have in the community. And since I don't see those friends very often at all.
It's very difficult. And that's part of our balancing act. Is trying to find that extra time to see them. But
so that I can be me for a little while.
Right. And then that takes away from our time. So hopefully things are going to, you know, ease up in enough that we can have some us time more readily. Other than on a weekend when we can go see them. But even when we go see them, we have us time in the vehicle.
We have us time in the vehicle. We usually have time that weekend to have time for us, even if it's the morning. We've always found time when we can. And we're not, you know, no matter how busy we get, we're not giving up on kink because that is an essential part of who we are.
Absolutely.
And, you know, my collar is on my wrist and that relationship is a constant.
We live it 24/7, even though 24/7 sometimes doesn't allow for it.
True.
Because even though I'm not swinging a flogger, I'm still a kinky fucker.
And it's a state of being more than it is the type of play that you're engaging in. We may not be able to do flogging or canes or anything like that because there's big ears in the house. But that doesn't mean that there's not a power exchange dynamic between us.
Right.
You always find ways on the everyday, ordinary day to remind me that I belong to you, to reestablish that connection, even if it's brief. You know, it can be as simple as, you know, making sure the kids aren't in the room and then grabbing the hair.
And touching the butt.
Always touching the butt.
But, I'm always touching the butt.
You know, it doesn't take a lot to reestablish that connection and that dominance. Sometimes it's the little gestures. And sometimes you find a way to work those into your vanilla life so that you can do it even when there's other people around.
Mm-hmm.
You've done that before. You've kind of, you know, under the guise of running your fingers through my hair, kind of grabbed and pulled.
Mm-hmm.
And in public where nobody else is going to notice, but I know what it means.
And in front of the kids, they're getting up at 2:30 in the morning.
They don't think anything of it.
They don't think anything of it. And
I mean,
it is an act of your submission.
It is. Your choice. I actually suggested that it be written into our DS agreement that I would get up because I felt like that was something I can do. Even on the days when I am flat out exhausted and don't want to get out of bed, I do it because it's a service. And those days that it's harder to get out of bed, it means more, I think.
I was thinking of if there was a time when you had missed getting up with me. And I was thinking that there was a day you were sick that I didn't have you get up, but I don't think there is.
Nope.
The only time was when you were out of town for work.
The only time I've missed it was when I was not here. And I felt bad then.
But I told you I forgave you because it was for work and we have to do what we have to do.
Right.
Because without the jobs, we cannot afford this luxurious recording studio.
We're in my bathroom.
Yes, we're in the master bath, the ensuite.
It's good acoustics though, so you know.
Yeah, bathrooms have great acoustics. That's why we record in here usually.
So, you know, it's important to find little ways to keep that connection between you, to keep the kink alive, even when the vanilla life is, it has to be a priority because, you know, if you don't work, you don't get to eat. So you find little ways.
The kids want food all the time.
No, the kids want to eat and they want
every
to like
day.
Clothes and sleep. You know, it's just crazy. But there are times when it is very, very difficult to find the balance. There are times when I feel so overwhelmed that I end up crying myself to sleep. And not because you've made me feel that way, but because I feel like if I can't get everything done, that I'm a failure. Having that last podcast late upset me so much to the point where I was just a nervous wreck because I felt like I was letting you down. I felt like I was letting the listeners down because I don't know if you guys know, but it takes a tremendous amount of time to edit a 1 hour podcast.
They don't know how many times I say,
I do too. And they don't know how many times you say, because I edit it out.
I know. That's what I was getting at.
And it takes a very long time. Sometimes up to 8 hours for one episode.
That was a really long episode.
It was a very long episode. Not by the time I was done with it, but it was a very long episode. So anyway, sometimes it's difficult to maintain that balance. And sometimes I need you to tell me to slow down. Tell me, okay, it's okay if this one thing gets behind. These are your priorities. This has to happen first, then this and this. And sometimes I need you to stop me because I have a tendency to push myself too hard and I'm too hard on myself when I can't meet all the commitments. So sometimes it's about prioritization. You just have to figure out what the most pressing thing is right now and prioritize by what is most important. And it usually is family, then work, then everything else. It's got to be the things that are going to fill your heart and keep the house running.
Fill your heart, fill your belly, fill your life.
That works.
That's your balance. Fill your heart with love for your family and very close friends. Fill your belly with the food from the fruits of your spoils from working. And fill your life with your extended friends and kinky community.
It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
There you go. I thought it was BK's kinky order of needs, but that's boobs and butts.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs says there are five things that you need. Self-actualization, esteem, love and belonging, safety, and physiological. Those are the types of needs that you have. And that's the order. The
and first, boobs and butts.
And the basics are your physiological needs. You have to meet the needs of shelter, food, things like that. And then safety needs are next. And then love and belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. But I think the love and belonging should be the center. Well, it is the center. It should be the basis. But
now we have five things. Heart, belly, life, boobs, and butts.
Okay. There you go. Anyway, so this podcast is a little bit delayed because you're coming off of a 7-day work week.
Yes, another one.
And when we say 7-day work week, we don't mean 8 to 5, 7 days a week. We mean 3 a.m. to what time
I leave
you get
the house
home? 7
just
to
before
PM?
3 a.m. and I get home around 7 at the latest usually, sometimes 6:30.
So we're talking a ridiculous number of hours of work and driving. It is a definite balancing act and nobody's perfect at it. And if anybody says they're perfect at it, they're lying.
I would like to point out it right now because, you know, my work hours, I do work 12-hour shifts, but I have an hour and 20-minute commute. Now, some people just dropped what they're listening on or they swerved off the road if they're listening in the car. Yeah, I have an hour and 20-minute commute because you live where your love is, and that's why I drive that far. If I didn't make the amount of money that I make at work, I would not do it. The overtime I've been working is optional, and I'm doing it so that we don't fall behind if something happens at the end of the year, like we talked about earlier. But yeah, there's a lot of hours there, and it's really hard for her to get with me sometimes because I'm exhausted to record. And we're working on a better plan because the podcast was just something we felt like we wanted to do and that it was needed and that hopefully we're making a difference in some people's lives. I have received some messages from some people in New Hampshire that said they were really appreciative of some of the earlier episodes. And I have a couple of friends in California that have said some very nice things about the show. And I appreciate you guys all very much. I'm not going to say your names because you didn't tell me I could.
But the message we want to get out this week is, if you are having trouble balancing your kink and your vanilla life and your work, you are not alone. We all deal with this. None of us are great at it, but you make a priority the things that are most important to you. And for some people, that can't be kink. Mm-mm. It has to be, you know, their personal lives, their family, their friends, their work, and that's life. Things are going to change. Eventually, kids move out and jobs change and lives change and other things become priorities. And some people drop out of kink altogether, or at least the public part of kink. And that's life. You do the best you can to balance what you have. And then you forgive yourself for not being able to do everything.
Couldn't have said it better. Good job.
And on that note, we're going to go ahead and go into book club.
And now, boys and girls, it's book club time. This week, from Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, The Romance and Sexual Sorcery of Sadomasochism by Philip Miller and Molly Devon, Chapter
5, Straight Facts and Bent Phalluses, Sexual Attitudes.
That title makes my dick hurt.
It should.
Makes my head hurt, too.
And there's nothing in this chapter about bent phalluses, so I'm not really sure why it's part of the title. But This chapter is all about sex, which, since I think I have already established, is not my favorite part of this book, is not my favorite chapter. But we're going to talk about it anyway.
Once again, I will remind everyone, including us, because I have to remind myself when we talk about this book, the book is about relationships and sometimes sex is included in those. So,
well, yeah,
it's not about all BDSM stuff, but it's a relationship type chapter. So approach it from that point of view and maybe it might feel a little better reading it.
Yeah. So while some of us don't mix sex and play, this, as you said, is about relationships, and a lot of us do mix sex and relationships.
Yes, we do. I mean, yes, people do.
All right. So this chapter starts off with, actually, my favorite part of the whole chapter is in the first paragraph when it says, half of all women experience math anxiety because they're always told that it is 8 inches long. But it talks about how society is still very puritanical where it comes to sex. It's something that normal, nice people don't talk about. And they're assuming that we're here and reading this book because we have pushed beyond that puritanical thoughts about sex and we are more open-minded.
And you know, when we read that part, I was thinking of, God, what was that? It was a religion, or I can't remember exactly what it was like. And because you're here and reading this or watching this, you're obviously smarter than the average person in society. And I can't remember what it was. I think it was from a movie or something, but that scenario, whatever it was, popped in my head like, okay, because I'm reading this book, I'm more open-minded than anyone else in the universe right now. I mean,
it's, you know, that's a common cult kind of talk.
Yeah. It's a cult mentality.
That complimenting to, you know, It talks about how sex has for a long time been dominated by the male perspective, and women are kind of just expected to lay back and think of England, let it happen. It talks about how men don't consider it sex unless they have ejaculated and the orgasm has become the goal. And
yeah, I'm glad
men are threatened by women who openly admit their sexuality, and the genders kind of tend to treat each other as rivals when it comes to sex. And that orgasms are the focus and foreplay is neglected for the most part. It's making a lot of generalizations, I think.
Got to remember also, it's a snapshot from 20 years ago.
Yes, it is.
Probably more true then. I would say probably foreplay is more prevalent today with people, but not always.
They have suggestions, though.
Oh, good. I was so worried they would not.
It says, what if we were to consider non-coital play an end in itself? What if we abandoned the expectation of intercourse and orgasm every time we feel sexual toward each other? What if each kiss and caress were regarded as complete sex acts instead of preliminaries to copulation? What if orgasm played a part in a session of lovemaking only if it seemed appropriate? How much anxiety could we avoid if we didn't approach sex with predefined expectations? So that's not bad.
That's not bad.
And it is a healthy view of sex.
It's a healthy view of relationship.
True.
Relationship not built on sex. Whoever would have thought such a thing would work?
The general gist of this chapter, I mean, the overall point that they're making here is that everybody would have a more satisfying relationship if they dropped the goals where it comes to sex, the expectations of what it's supposed to be and what a relationship is, you know, the kind of sex is supposed to include. Dump goals of conquest, duration, performance, simultaneous orgasms, reject all sexual goals altogether, renounce traditional sexual roles, and learn to listen to our inner role models.
Yeah.
There's an entire section where the men go off on their own and the women are supposed to not pay attention. Yeah,
the clubhouse.
It's basically him talking just to the men. And really all it says is that men need to take their cue from the women. That maybe they would enjoy sex more if they did what women do and live more in the moment and not focused on the end goal of getting off. If they experienced every sensation as it came, delved into each kiss and each touch and really like appreciated each moment instead of rushing towards the end.
Yeah, I can buy into that. That's good advice. Savor the moment, not the act.
Because the intimacy is the being together. It's mm-hmm. not the...
Some people are just not intimate people, though. They don't... I mean, you know, they want the physical contact, but they don't want the emotions.
And then that's a different type of relationship.
That is a very different type of relationship. That's not really who we are at all.
No. Our emotions are all tangled up in it.
Oh, yeah. We're very intertwined.
Oh, one of their suggestions for why they should treat lovemaking more like women is because women can have multiple orgasms.
Some men can too.
Some women can't.
Yeah. Some think they can't, but find out they can.
When approaching... Oh, so they actually give some advice here. When approaching women, don't be pushy. No one reacts well to being pushed into sex. True story. The more you push, the more you will encounter resistance. You know, if something's supposed to happen, it'll happen naturally. If nothing happens, that should be okay as well.
True. Very, very true.
Romantic encounters often have non-verbal cues that you should be able to read. So you have to actually pay attention to each other.
Oh my goodness.
I know, that's crazy talk.
Was it like communication?
If you smile, does she smile back? Does she actually pay attention to what you're saying?
I smiled at my girlfriend. She threw a knife at me. I'm not sure what she's trying to tell me.
I don't think it's good though.
It doesn't sound very good, does it,
Lorena? I guess it depends on the kind of knife. If it's a butter knife, maybe she just wants you to do the dishes.
Yeah, well, you know, if her name is Lorena Bobbitt, run.
Run, yes. Let's see. When things do go well and you get to have sex, take your time, play some games, undress her slowly without letting her touch you. It's all just, I don't know. I mean, I don't really want advice about how to have sex because you know, I think
we've got that figured out.
I do what works for me, but basically they're giving the men advice to slow down and take their time and quit rushing to the end.
20 years ago, men needed that. I mean, you know, we were looking at the end of the 90s there, and yeah, it was that flux period when fashion was like, what were they thinking?
Isn't that every decade?
Yeah, we always look back on every decade and think the same thing, but I mean, I'm trying to remember what was popular on TV and stuff. I'm guessing there was Seinfeld was
Friends.
Very popular. Friends was very popular. And it was a lot of TV shows about just random sexual conquests that wasn't the main theme of the shows. But that's what was out there. Sex was becoming very, very public on television.
It still is.
And it still is becoming more prevalent, but it was just really at that part where it was really starting to break through and they were really pushing boundaries and...
Will and Grace.
Yeah.
Let's see. Notes from the women's side of things. They think that men would be surprised to hear how open and graphic women can be when discussing sex with each other, but I don't think at this point men are surprised any longer because TV has kind of outed us to that extent.
Yeah. Yeah, I never and doubted movies. It. I never doubted it.
Women talk about sex too. I mean, honestly, if men and women would be as open and talkative about sex as men are to men and women are to women, we'd probably have fewer communication issues.
Okay, I'm going to correct that statement. If men and women would be as open as women are to women and men are making up stories to men.
Okay, point. Yes.
There's a reason we go to the event called Cigars and Lies. Because we smoke cigars and tell lies.
Gotcha. Women don't lie, though. Usually, when we're talking about sex, we are brutally honest.
Yeah, which is probably why men don't want to have that conversation.
Also, good point. Yeah. But in our lifestyle, we really do need to be
You have to have open that and open and honest.
Honestly, I mean, if you just ask for what you want, you'd be less disappointed, I think.
I think if you just ask for what you want, you'd be surprised how willing your partner is to give it.
If they're a good one, yeah.
If not, might need to rethink that partnership.
They think that women, rather than challenging the taboos, frequently hide behind them. We fear appearing to know too much about sex. This is definitely dated, because I think, at least I hope, 20 years later, that women are a little more empowered than they were 20 years ago.
I would think so.
I know that my teenagers are a lot more willing to talk about sex than I was at their age.
Yeah. So. And I think that's a product of society and how openly it's discussed on television and media and everywhere. It's everywhere.
Sadly, the one place that they do not and are not supposed to talk about sex is in school. In the area where we live, at least, there is no sex education. There is no information given to these high school kids.
And you know exactly why that is. It's because... Well, I don't want someone teaching my kids about that. That's my job. But then they don't.
And it's not just that. It's that we live in the Bible Belt and they firmly believe that we should only have to teach the kids about abstinence. Abstinence is the only solution.
Right.
And I think it's time that we honestly admit as a society that teenagers have sex. We're not going to stop that from happening.
No.
What we could do is educate them and help them be more prepared and safe.
I think if they're exposed to more information about how sex is not just physical, but mental, emotional, and it ties, it's not something that they have any exposure to unless it's discussed with them from a parent. Their friends are not, oh my gosh, it was so cool, it was awesome, it felt great. That's all you hear. Never mind 3 days later that they're sobbing in their bedroom because, oh my God, what have I done? I can't believe it. She won't talk to me or he won't talk to me. Or
teenagers don't really have the coping mechanisms to deal with the emotional fallout of having that intimate of a relationship.
Enough life.
And we, instead of telling them, you know, we're going to shame you if you do this, we need to give them the support that they need. Mm-hmm. And I have my own children and I don't encourage them to go have sex, but I know at some point it's going to happen. And so I've tried to be the kind of parent that they can come talk to and get advice from, and I don't want them completely unprepared and, you know, going out into the world.
Right.
So,
for the record, I think you do a great job parenting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. They talk about how everybody has insecurities, and we tell men that they need to make a move and not take any negative response personally, but women are afraid of making the move because they're afraid of rejection, and we should be less worried about that.
That's so funny, because if you ask most men, it's not that they're afraid of something negative, they're afraid of rejection. And 20 years ago, it was women who were afraid of rejection.
Women are, as a whole, I hate to generalize, but I think as a whole, women are less afraid of approaching a man these days. As you know, it was traditionally expected that the men do the approaching.
I'll say that is probably true, especially with younger millennial generation. They'll come up and just open their mouth and say whatever without any
regard for consequences.
Exactly. No. Yeah, that, because that's how they've always been brought up. You know, it's like, hey, wanna fuck? Excuse me? Do I know you? Millennials are more apt to, and I think it's being a 40-something white guy growing up without the internet is far different. You know, I didn't have a cell phone. I had a phone line extension in my bedroom that I talked to my girlfriend on until it was her bedtime. I did not have a computer. There was no internet. But see, now we went through a phase of, oh my gosh, we can take pictures and put them on the internet. Oh my God. Now we found out, wow, that's there forever. And then now they're like, eh, so what? So I'm like, well, that was quick. We got to that stage awfully quick.
Yes, we did.
And I think that's kind of what the progression of sex has been in society too. Oh, hey, there's consequences. You may need to take, you know, in the 60s, you may need to get a shot of penicillin. Then it was like, oh shit, penicillin ain't going to cure this. And now it's really a lot of education about STDs and STIs, and some stuff will kill you. Some stuff is curable. Some stuff will never be cured. It won't kill you, but it will be with you forever. And before, everyone was just worried about babies, which is still a problem. Yes, but
the 80s came along and the AIDS crisis, and that changed our attitudes about STDs.
Yeah, a lot. And I think that was where more rampant sex education in public came to the forefront. Not necessarily in public school, but those after-school specials.
True.
And those TV shows geared towards teens addressed those issues, and they addressed them very well. They were very good programming at the time, and probably are still good programs today. You know, they've probably, some of them have stood the test of time.
There are a lot of places in this country that actually have really good public school sex education.
Yes.
And they start at a very young age. They start in kindergarten by teaching the kids, you know, their body is their personal space. They teach them about personal space and how they teach them about consent from a very young age, and how important it is.
So important.
And they teach them how important it is to respect other people's personal space. And as they get older and as topics become more appropriate, you know, they teach them about their bodies. They teach them about puberty. They teach them about sex, but only when it's age appropriate. And the whole program as a whole really is helping in some areas to decrease the rape culture, because they're teaching not just the girls to protect themselves, but they're teaching the boys to respect the girls and respect each other. And I wish that those kind of programs were more prevalent, but at this particular point in time and in this particular political climate where they're actually trying to decrease the visibility of sex, it's not going to happen.
I don't think we're going to go backwards with the visibility of sex.
Anyway, I'm off topic. So the basic gist of this chapter is men should slow down and take their time and pay attention to what's actually happening now and not only be focused on the end. Women should be more open and honest about what they want and more willing to be the aggressor when it comes to finding partners. And then the last part says, superb sex is realized by challenging traditional attitudes and scrapping the relics of old mores. Abandoning traditional sex roles, learning to tune into our intersexuality. It says that most people want honesty, communication, trust, and intimacy in their relationships, but in the BDSM world, it is actually necessary that we have those things in place before we start playing with power exchange. And that's about it. Very short chapter this time.
It is. It's very short, which is probably good, because
the previous one was really long.
The previous one was really long, but also because it's about sex and there's not really any BDSM in that chapter.
True.
It's part of the book though, so we read it and discussed it. And
but I'm really excited about the next chapter, because the next chapter goes into all kinds of different
types of play.
I mean, everything from fisting to nipple clamps to, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the next chapter.
Quite a variety of fun stuff coming.
Next chapter is going to get me all excited. All right. Well, I think that is it for this episode.
I think so too. I'm BK.
I'm Princess Pita.
And we will continue having our adventures, and please continue to adventure with us. Thanks for joining us.
Bye. I torture you. Take my hand.
Let a dragon be your safe call. House of the Faithful Dragons is offering Safe Call as a service. Just call them and give them the details, the date and time, the location, the names of the people involved, and they'll contact you with a prearranged time via text or call to get the all clear from you or to summon the police on your behalf if you cannot. 972-591-3730. That's 972-591-3730 from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time. Outside of these hours, someone will call you back as soon as possible. That's 972-591-3730 between 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. Central Time, and let a dragon be your safe call.